Yam krodha kamma sahaja pranayadi bitti vatsaya moha guru gura visevya bhavai sanchintatasya sadvisham tanumapurete govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Yam upon whom? Krodha, wrath, kama, amorous passion. Sahaja pranaya, naturally friendly love. Adi, and so on. Bhiti, fear. Vatsalya, parental affection. Moha, delusion. Guru Gaurava, reverence. Sevya Bhavai, and with the attitude of willing service. Sanchintya, meditating. Tasya, of that. Sadrisim, befitting. Tanum, bodily form. Apu, attained. Ete, these persons. Govindam, Govinda, Adi Purusham, the original person, Tam, him, Aham, I, Bhajami, worship. Translation and purport. Text 55. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, the meditators of whom, by meditating upon him, under the sway of wrath, amorous passion, natural friendly love, fear, parental affection, delusion, reverence, and willing service, attain to bodily forms befitting the nature of their contemplation. Very esoteric truth. Purport. Devotion is of two kinds. One, of the nature of deference to regulation, and two, constituted of natural feeling. So there's bhakti yoga according to the rules and regulations, and then there's spontaneous bhakti yoga according to spontaneous love. Bhakti is roused by the following with a tinge of faith in the rule of the shastras and instruction of the preceptors. So this bhakti is awakened by how? And then, yeah, association with the teachers. Such bhakti is of the nature of loyalty to the scriptural regulations. It continues to be operative as long as the corresponding natural feeling is not aroused. If a person loves Krishna out of natural tendency, there is the principle of raga, which is no other than a strong desire to serve, which turns into bhava, or substantive feeling. When the substantive feeling is aroused, the devotee becomes an object of mercy of Krishna. It takes much time to attain this stage. Devotion, which is of the nature of feeling, is superior to that connected with scriptural regulation, soon attains to the realized state of an attractive to Krishna. Its various aspects are described in this sloka. Santa bhava, full of reverence to the superior. Dasha bhava, full of service for carrying out the commands of the object of worship. Sakya bhava, or natural friendly love. Vatsalya bhava, or parental affection. And Madhurya Bhava, or amorous love, all are included in the category of devotion of the nature of instinctive attachment. Is that okay so far? I know this English is very difficult. So if you have any questions up to this point, if there's a word you don't understand.
Sway.
Huh?
What is the sway? Translation says sway of wrath and irrespiration. What is sway again?
Under the influence. Yeah. Like trees are sway by the wind, right? They're pushed by the wind. Okay, continuing on. But anger, fear, and delusion, though they are the nature of instinctive impulse, are not devotion in the strict sense of the term, because they are not friendly but hostile to the object. Anger is found in asuras like Shishupal, fear in Kamsa, and delusion in the panditas of the pantheistic school. They have the feelings of anger, fear, and instinctive impulse marked by complete self-forgetful identification with the non-differentiated Brahman. But as there is no friendly feeling towards the object of devotion, there is no bhakti. Again, among the feelings of Santa, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya, Santa, though indifferent and dormant in raga, is still reckoned as bhakti on account of its being a little friendly. There is an immense volume of raga in the other four varieties of emotion. By the promise of Gita, yaya tam mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajami aham, I serve one according to his submission. Those who allow themselves to be actuated by the sentiments of fear, anger, and delusion attain to the sayuja mukti, merging in the absolute. The santas obtain bodily forms with aptitude for addiction to Brahman and Paramatma. The Dasya and Sakya classes of worshippers attain bodily forms characterized by masculine or feminine disposition according to their respective grades of eligibility. The Vatsalya class of worshippers get bodily forms befitting fatherly and motherly sentiments. The amorous lovers of Krishna attain the pure forms of gopis, spiritual milkmaids of Braja. So I'll just read the text again. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, the meditators of whom by meditating upon him under the sway of wrath, amorous passion, natural friendly love, fear, parental affection, delusion, reverence, and willing service attain to bodily forms befitting the nature of their contemplation. Well, what an interesting verse. We chant it every week, myself being quite mechanically, I chant it and don't really think of the deep meaning. And now in this purport, so much meaning has been brought out. It's just, it's amazing. I can't think of any religious scripture that describes the spiritual world, for one. What to speak of explaining how one goes to the spiritual world and what form you take when you go there. So basically in this... Okay, well, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask about Shanta.
Uh-huh.
That's reverence to a superior. That's what that Shanta Bhava means.
Uh-huh.
Reverence to a superior.
Yeah.
Why would that not be? Why would that be dormant? Why?
Well, it's
wouldn't that be?
It's rather passive. I mean, it's just like we have reverence for the present President of the United States, right? We have respect for him, at least some people do. But there's no active relationship. But yet he's a person and there's some feeling for him. Right? So it's not like there's nothing going on. There's some relationship there. And it's based on reverence and respect, but there's not an active relationship. Where in servitude, there's day-to-day, minute-by-minute conversation. There's there's loving exchanges of affection and activity. You know, the servant is actively knowing what the master wants and is always trying to keep one step ahead of the master. Before the master can even ask for what he wants, the servant is already has it, you know.
So using the president's example, the Secret Service agents that would take a bullet for the president, that wouldn't be considered under the same as just reverence.
No, yeah, they're not in Santa Ras, they're in Dasha Ras. But it's interesting though, no matter what, if you have some sort of connection with the Absolute, even if it's out of anger or a fear, there's some meditation on the Absolute Truth, and that will carry you, you know, to some aspect of the spiritual realm. In the case of fear or anger, then you'll merge into the Brahman. If you're in, as according to the purport here, if it's in awe and reverence, you may be a tree in the spiritual world, or you may have a spiritual form, but you still have this relationship more with the Brahman or with the Paramatma. But if you have, you know, a relationship of service, or as a friend, or as a lover, or as a husband, as a father or a mother, then you'll get a bodily form like that and have this more intimate service relationship with the Absolute, Sri Krishna.
I actually had this question for a long time, and the more I try to explore it, the more confused I am about it. So the question is that we can't go to Goloka Vrindavan from here, because in what do you call it? What's his name? Kumar, who came back? Gop Kumar is described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that you have to be in pastimes of Krishna to go back to Goloka. You can't fall down from Goloka, so basically Krishna says that one who comes to my planet never returns again. So we basically can't fall from Goloka, we have to fall from Vaikuntha to material world. But we can upgrade to Goloka by going back from this planet. Now,
where are you getting all this information?
Well, because that's what I've been hearing all my life, lectures, you... So I'm basically confused. If you can't fall down from Goloka Vrindavan, you basically, well, fall down to material from Vaikuntha. How is it that...
You're making a lot of assumptions, and on those assumptions, now you're coming up with a question. So this is can get even more confusing.
Tell me about it.
So there's four or five things you've already said that are... debatable and questionable.
Okay.
So to try and come to a conclusion based on premises that are already maybe faulty, well, I won't be able to give an answer to it.
Well, I guess the bottom line is, can we go back home to Godhead after this life?
Prabhupada,
because it's really confusing.
Prabhupada says, of course, we can go back to Godhead. And Krishna says that, you know, for one who's self-realized, he's, you know, even though he's in this material world, he's not in this material world. And the distinction between the spiritual and the material is actually, it's in the mind. You know, we're actually never separate from Godhead or from the spiritual world. But in our vision, we are. You know, it's like when you're dreaming, You're always that person, but in the dream you forget who you are. I had a wild dream last night. Anyway, the scriptures give us explanation of the spiritual world and how one goes back there. And then the acharyas have made different comments. So one assumption is that, it's very debatable, how we come to this material world and where we've come from. And Prabhupada has made different statements about it, and different acharyas have made different statements about it. And sometimes they appear contradictory. Even Prabhupada's statements appear very contradictory at times. So it's something basically that we can't understand. And that's the ultimate comment by the acharyas. And one shouldn't even try and understand it because the mind is limited. But one thing we can understand is that we are here. And so the real question is not how did I get here, but how do I get out of here? If you've fallen into an ocean, or you've somehow you were walking along a pier and you fell off, and now you're drowning. It's at that moment you're not concerned about how you misstepped and fell off. And you're concerned about how you get out, and that's the only thing that's important. Having said that, acharyas make different comments about basically according to the Brahma Samhita, what we've just read right here in this shastra, and then Śrīla Viswanātha Cakravarti Thakur, he's commented a lot on these sorts of details, so we get a lot of information from him. And I've asked Bhanu Swami these questions a lot, and Bhanu Swami has translated just about everything that Śrīla Viswanātha Cakravarti has written. And so he's got a lot of information, when it comes to these kind of esoteric topics. But right from this verse, we can understand that according to your cultivation of bhakti, you'll attain a bodily form. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta mentions that the beginning, it will be bhakti according to rules and regulations, and you'll be attracted to what it's saying in the scripture. So just like we're very attracted to what's being presented here in Brahma Samhita, otherwise why would we get up early and come here every Saturday and chant it? So that's something. It's significant. It's not nothing, as Vaish would say. It's not nothing. It's something. And that's a motivation. It's, there's some devotion to God, some respect to God, even though maybe very small. And then we're also attracted to the teachers and the preceptors like Srila Prabhupada, and we have devotion and gratitude and inspiration from the great acharyas. And so those two things are our ticket to practicing bhakti, even though we may not have any qualification and we may be in the depths of ignorance. To perform other types of yoga, like Ashtanga yoga or Jnana yoga, even Karma yoga, requires some qualification. And especially Jnana yoga or Ashtanga yoga, you have to be in pure mode of goodness and very renounced. But bhakti, anyone can begin bhakti if they have a little faith, which is gained in the association of the devotees. So bhakti begins with bhakti, and the results of bhakti depend on bhakti. They don't depend on anything external. And so even if one doesn't have bhakti, if somehow or other, even one is a demon and gets some sort of contact with Krishna, even out of fear or anger, he can... can merge, he can get out of the cycle of birth and death and merge into Brahman. And according to our cultivation, so the six Goswamis, you know, bringing the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, there, as Lord Chaitanya said, Namo Mahavadanaya, Krishna Prima Pradayate, Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gora Tivishay Namaha. This is Rupa Goswami's conclusion that Lord Chaitanya, he's giving everyone this potential to attain Madhurya Ras. And the teachings of the Goswamis are all about how to cultivate this Madhurya Ras. And of course, within, you know, Lord Chaitanya's movement, there are other rasas as well. There's all the rasas are there. And even different forms, not only Krishna, but some of followers of Lord Chaitanya are devotee, are Ram Bhaktas. But potentially there's this potential to cultivate this highest rasa. And if one is cultivating this, then according to this verse, that's the bodily form you'll take when you go back to the spiritual world. Or that will awaken even before you leave this body. It's possible that if you reach, as it mentioned, the stages here of devotional service and practice, and then it mentioned, then there's a raga begins, which is attachment. And from that attachment turns to bhava or love. And if one may not have, you know, gone to the spiritual world yet, but have this intense love for the Supreme Lord. And from that, one's spiritual body begins to develop, his siddha-deha. So even in initiation, it's like we were talking about Wednesday in the Bhagavad Gita class, that, you know, when we're born into this world, we have a certain script, you know. We're following the three modes of material nature, and it's like we've been given a play and a role to play. And, you know, we're great players. We identify 100% with this role. But, you know, eventually the script is changed, you know, when you by the mercy of the acharyas, when you take their shelter, your script changes and you're no longer following the script, but you're following the script of the acharyas, you're following the script of the Bhagavad Gita. Then gradually you awaken to who you really are. Yes, direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya.
And they present at the time of Chaitanya's period, or
oh.
They came after?
No. If you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is this book here, you see these gold books. These are the authorized biography of Lord Chaitanya. So you'll meet in here how the primary first of the six Goswamis is Sanatana and Rupa. And Sanatana and Rupa, they were high-class ministers in the government. And they met Lord Chaitanya. They met him once. First they heard about him, then they met him. As soon as they met him, they vowed to become his followers. And then gradually they left their government service and met him again in Prayag. Lord Chaitanya, he instructed Sanatana Goswami for 2 months. And he instructed Rupa Goswami for 10 days. And so these talks are described, they're written. It's only 500 years ago, so there's a lot of written record. And then there's Raghunath Das Goswami. He met Lord Chaitanya, and then he spent 1 year with Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri, and then he went to Vrindavan. And then there's Gopal Bhatta, and he also was with Lord Chaitanya in Puri. And then there's Raghunath Bhatta. He was also in Puri, and they were all sent to Vrindavan. And then finally there's Jiva Goswami, And Jiva Goswami, he is the youngest of the six Goswamis. And he's also the most prolific writer and is considered one of the greatest religious scholars that has ever lived, not only in India, but scholars who know about Jiva and what he's, and his philosophy and his writings on philosophy, he's well known. That's right, yeah.
Do they have a tradition of, did they establish after those six, are there other?
Yes.
This says Saraswati Goswami.
Yeah.
In the six people you mentioned, is he one among them? No.
No, he is the spiritual master of our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. If you look in the Bhagavad Gita, it has the disciplic succession there. It's written down from Brahma. We're in the line of Brahma. So it's coming all the way down from Brahma, then to Lord Chaitanya, then to the six Goswamis, then to Narottam Das Thakur, then to Srila Viswanatha Chakravarti, and Baladev Bijubhushan, and then Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gokishore, Bhakti Siddhanta, and A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
So here it's listed about 32, and Swami Prabhupada is number 32 here. So
yes.
After Swami Prabhupada, has someone been appointed as the direct disciple of Swami Prabhupada, or it's just is this something like? I'm looking in terms of some kind of the Vatican, okay?
Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada, before he left,
he did not appoint anyone, so he just spoke to.
He didn't appoint. He didn't want to appoint anyone. He wanted to make a GBC. He said that all of his disciples will become guru.
Okay.
But at the same time, we have an institution, so there's some process that, it's not that anyone can just represent the institution.
Yeah, I understand. So has that been officially announced?
It was started before Srila Prabhupada left.
And who would that be? What's his name? After Swami Prabhupada, who would be coming as number 33 here?
Well, there's many.
Oh, really?
All of his disciples are number 33.
Ah. So it's, okay.
And when you go through college kind of thing, or some rules and regulations to be qualified to be.
Okay, I mean.
There's some recognition by the GBC body that this person is an authorized guru in ISKCON.
Yeah, so is there some kind of a catalog or something that has been published to that effect? No, I'm just asking.
Actually, I think there is a list online of the current initiating gurus in ISKCON.
I mean, obviously, I'm asking all these questions because I'm in quest of talking to a guru, searching a guru, and really finding, you are really in search, and you have to find the right guru when the right moment comes,
sure. And
you do not know who he is.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm asking you these questions.
Oh, those are very important questions, and I don't mind.
Because this is listed here, I thought probably they have the procedure when the white smoke comes out of the chimney, the Pope is declared, something like that. So.
No, see, the thing is, it was the system in many traditions that the acharya appoints the next acharya.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. That is one system. But Lord Chaitanya's mission is a very dynamic preaching mission. And it's not limited to one acharya. Actually, Lord Chaitanya's teaching is that everyone become a guru.
Okay.
That everyone learn this teaching and then teach others. But at the same time, we do have an institution, so there has to be some structure to it.
From with reference to this book, okay, these Saraswati Goswami Thakura, everything that is put in Sanskrit here has been written by Saraswati Goswami, am I right? Or he's just taking some extracts from the Gita or some from the Vedas and
this Sanskrit is this is a scripture called the Brahma Samhita.
Uh-huh.
It's not anything taken from Bhagavad Gita or from one of the other Vedas. This is a scripture that was found by Lord Chaitanya in South India.
Oh.
And Lord Chaitanya, he found that in this Brahma Samhita, all the essence of Vaishnava philosophy is in there.
Mm-hmm.
So he had it copied, and then his followers began to copy it. Now, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he has commented on these verses. So these are the purports.
Okay.
So within those purports, this is Bhaktisiddhanta's writing. The original Sanskrit is the original text that was found by Lord Chaitanya in South India.
Okay. And in this Brahma Samhiti, let's say, hypothetically speaking, let us say, are there 108 verses or 200 verses?
This was one chapter, the fifth chapter.
Of the Brahma Samhita.
It's now been lost. So the other parts of the Brahma Samhita have never been discovered. So this is the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita that was all that was remaining when Lord Chaitanya found it.
Okay. Okay, so this is only a portion of that Brahma Samhita.
That's
my question,
right, yeah.
Basically.
Yes.
So there's more to the Brahma Samhita than that.
Well, it doesn't exist now, at least not in written form anywhere.
Okay. Thank you.
But if you read this, you'll find that this is all you need.
Okay. Because when I come to the sessions here, every day I find some sessions they have the nectar book.
Yeah,
sometimes they read this book.
Yeah, this
This
temple's very high pace. It's very educational. Perhaps more than you'll find almost anywhere else. And so at first it may be a little bit confusing, and we read from a lot of different books.
Yeah, so that's why I'm just trying to find,
put
some order into my thought process here.
Yeah, well, very good. That's great. Okay. Especially the Saturday classes, we chant a lot of verses, and we'll be reading from the Bhagavatam, but before we do that, then we chant from... We're going to have a kirtan, and then we'll have a kirtan now, I think. Then we read, I forget how Vaish does it. I've been away for a while. I've lost the routine. Do we have kirtan now, or do we read the verses? Whatever I want, huh? Let's have kirtan. That's easy. So often on Sundays.
I have a question.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
We have been talking about that. So when we say, or when it is told that by meditating upon him under the sway of that, naturally, friendly love, fear, parental affection, delusion, reverence, and willing service attain to bodily forms befitting the nature of their contemplation. Can a parallel be drawn to, let's say for example, there are so many people coming to this temple, like people who had been visitors for many, many months and years here, and the visitors are newcomers like me and my husband here. So, and there are people like yourself and Swami Vaishveshya, I mean, some of the senior members and senior gurus who are here. Now, the way each one of us interact with whomsoever or he is the guru at a particular point in time, or the guru can even be Lord Krishna himself. I don't even have to be listening to somebody. I can be listening or having a direct conversation with Lord Krishna himself if I'm kind of that acute. But just for the purpose of simplicity, the interactions we have with another person in this thing is going to be based on the kind of relationship or the kind of conversations, the communications we establish from one within one another. For example, if I come here every day...
Do you have a question?
Yeah. So I'm just kind of trying to say, can we interpret, draw parallel to what I'm going to say to this? Just for understanding.
I'm getting lost.
Yeah, so just for understanding purpose. So okay. What has been told over here is like, if we kind of attribute or draw a parallel to anywhere we walk in, there is somebody who is sitting over there.
Mm-hmm.
In this universe, God is that somebody. Okay, sitting. I'm trying to understand and trying to draw some parallel. So if this is a household or this is an institution, there is somebody who is sitting over there as the person.
Yeah, everything's personal.
Anybody who is walking in, depending on what he wants and what kind of qualifications he comes with, that is what he is going to be perceived as by the person who is the owner of that place or who is sitting over there. For example, if you are the teacher, if I come here with equal qualifications as another guru, qualified as another guru in ISKCON, my relation to you is going to be from that platform.
So you're talking about relationships.
Yes. I'm trying to understand what is being told over here. I interpret mm-hmm. what is being told over here. So if I enter in this sanctum as a servant who is kind of doing a cleaning work, you are going to be, as a lord of this place, you are going to be perceiving me only as a servant. Or I'm going to be remaining forever only as a servant. There's nothing wrong with that philosophy. But if I want to be...
Okay, you're making many assumptions. I still don't know what your question is.
To become only a servant and be satisfied with that, am I kind of closer to you? Or do I have to come a little bit closer, a little bit higher than I read some of these books and get some more knowledge? Thereby I kind of come closer to you? Or just being present in this whole atmosphere, is it good enough for being accepted or for being... So what I'm trying to understand is like, you as Lord, you don't even dictate in what form I should be in this place.
So you're wondering about, particularly here, and what are the relationships and what is the structure?
Structure. Should we even be worried about following a structure?
No.
To be tied to this relationship
No. Basically, this temple is... ISKCON is an organization that's dedicated to spreading the teachings and following the practices of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And what gives us relationship with each other is like any other relationships. You know, we develop relationships based on service to each other, based on loving exchanges. Our relationship with each other here is based on a relationship with Srila Prabhupada. That's why I mentioned him. He's the founder, right? So we have a relationship with each other based on how we're following his teachings. Right? And so we also have a relationship with each other based on his books. So we're here studying his books. And then, as far as we have relationships to each other based on commitment that we have to, and just like you have a relationship with your husband, not only because you have a piece of paper that says you're married, but because you have a commitment to each other. And so, for example, us, as followers of Srila Prabhupada, we're committed to following his teachings. and we follow four regulator principles, and we chant so many rounds a day, and we become his disciple, and we become disciples of his disciples. And in this way, we develop relationships. So it's based, our relationship is based on our commitment and based on what we have in common. What we have in common is that we worship Lord Krishna and we follow Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And we try and give those teachings to others. So that's the basis of our relationship. And that, you know, is also based on our commitment. And to the degree that we have commitment, then to the degree we have relationships. How's that? Yeah. Okay. It's very natural.
I didn't have a question. I just had some thoughts in relation to this discussion.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I was just thinking, of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being the root of the family tree. And, I mean, he's the family tree. I mean, he's the original, you know, the original Lord. And so all of us are like family. And within that family or within our own little families, we have different relationships. But each one is very important. There's the mother, there's the father, there's brother, sister, children. And some are more senior to others, and some are more, junior. And like I myself am more junior, and there's others who are more senior. And but we're all in the same family together. And each devotee has whatever they are contributing in that family. And we're all working together and serving Krishna together. So that's just my thought.
Very nice. Thank you. Right.
Everyone is individual, and everyone is also has their own,
Sorry if I'm confused. The thing I wanted to say was, according to what one's position in any place, according to what one wishes or one exhibits, that is what is the bodily form we will be attaining. So you said it right. So I wanted to just kind of complete that. It was not a question, actually. What I was raising was not a question. So to this one person, to you, in our relationship, I may be a bhaktaiku who is kind of a devotee who is entering into this sanctum sanctorium, to another person by way of what I exhibit as myself voluntarily. This is one person, me. This Atma, what it exhibits to other person, I expect the relationship or the rules and regulations of a wife to my husband, or a mother to my children, or somebody to somebody else. So according to what I exhibit in that relation at that point of time, that is what I'm going to be seen as. Mm-hmm. So if I kind of come to the conclusion or the ability to exhibit myself to see the Supreme Lord in everything, every being, and exhibit that kind of whatever I want to be exhibiting in that relationship, that is how I will be perceived. By not only by God, by everybody. That is the form I will be getting either in my this birth or in my next birth, depending on however far I'm able to exhibit whatever I want to exhibit. Mm-hmm. So that's what I wanted to convey, so it kind of went a loop. And
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so according to the attraction we have to God, we'll develop a particular spiritual form that will enable us to have a relationship. Just like our relationships here. So, okay. So now we'll, usually at this time we chant a bhajan.